Speak regularly for conferences on marriage and parenting, and it's an honor to have him here. Please welcome me. Please join me in welcoming Dr. John Lux.
Thank you. I am grateful to be with y'all. I personally am very jealous for my Friday nights and my Saturday mornings. You know, after working all week, this time of the week, I want to be like, you know, in jammies watching Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives, you know? So kudos to you to care about your marriage enough to be willing to, you know, give up this precious time to come here. As you can hear, this is not my therapist voice. I've just gotten over a nasty something and have missed, I've had to cancel talks and whatever, so I've had teams of people praying, I have hot tea, I want y'all's prayers, and I'm going to try to, this is going to be like life. God's going to let me go as long as I go, and then it's going to be over. My voice will stop at some point, and we don't know when that'll be, so every moment we will cherish. I am a clinical psychologist. I've been doing this for 26 years or so, and actually, I started doing marriage therapy 35 years ago, and if you do the math, that was, yes, before I was married. I was awesome, man. You know, it's like, who did James Dobson say? I used to have three theories and no children, and now I have three children and no theories. That's kind of... Anyway, I basically do what you'd think I would do. I have a couch and a pipe and a sweater, and you know, I talk to people about, you know, their mother, whatever. And I do a lot. I do a very varied practice, which I enjoy and is somewhat necessary in Jackson, Mississippi. But you know, I do depression and anxiety and bipolar and panic attacks and addictions and whatever. But I also see a lot of marriages. I've been married 32 years, which is a very humbling thing. Our three daughters are in their 20s. You'll hear about them as we go along. My oldest is 29, and she's a therapist in Nashville, which is very interesting. One of mine is married, so now I have a boy, which has changed my life. Anyway, after working with, you know, struggling marriages for 35 years, I have something I'd like to try to tell regular struggling people, how to make their marriage better. And that is actually how I got started speaking on marriage. Contrary to what you might believe, my speaking on marriage did not begin with my wife saying, "Oh, honey, you have got to share your secrets." You know, I mean, other wives are missing out. Their husbands aren't like you. That's not how it started. She's actually, I think, given up, you know, believing I'm actually going to do any of this stuff, you know, right. So my professional credentials will have to suffice. I'm as big a knuckleheaded husband as any of y'all. It just won't sound that way, because speakers always sound like they're really good at the stuff they speak about, right? One time, my wife comes to these conferences from time to time. As you can imagine, she gets very sick of coming to the same marriage conference over and over again. But she came to one, and a woman stopped her afterwards and said to her, "What must it be like to be married to him?" And my wife very tactfully said, "You have no idea." So we're all very fallen. Welcome to the body of Christ, all right? That's where we're going to start. And it's actually kind of a good place to start. We're all fallen. Who we kidding? And that's an important place to start, because if you look at marriages, where do we often go? We often go into that badness hot potato, like, "It's your fault." "No, it's not. It's your fault." "Well, you said this." "No, I didn't. It was you started it." And we go back and forth in conflict as to sort of who's the bad guy. And before you know it, we have a problem that we want to try to solve in our marriage, but we're adversaries. And one of the things I want to start destroying from the beginning is this place where we all go automatically in our marriages, and that is, as I used to joke with my wife, if I'm this unhappy, it's got to be your fault. You know, I'm going to make you the bad guy, and you're going to make me the bad guy. Let me tell you the gospel. You're both bad. All right? Does that feel good? Feel better? Me and Norma reflect sometimes. It's like, you know, we're both from these rich Christian families, precious parents. I have essentially a doctorate in relating, and we're still like jerks to each other. You know, how do the Kardashian supposed to pull it off? You know, it's like all of us struggle at that level. And in fact, in a sense, we could say most marriages become marriages of law. In other words, something goes wrong and I'm ready to kind of hold you accountable. I'm ready to kind of blame you. And we go back and forth and back and forth. An overarching theme that's going to be behind everything we talk about this weekend is what it looks like to have a marriage of grace. In other words, moving you from the place where it's like, I'm so sick of you, blah, 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 to a place where it's like, I'm fallen and you're fallen. Under Christ. Now, how do we grow? Both of us are broken. Both of us are coming to this incomplete. How do we come to the cross together and say, you're right, I do need to grow there? How do we make our marriages safe to have the safety to tell you the truth that I'm not complete? That's the only place we can start growing. And that's kind of where we're going to start. So this is not going to be like maybe other marriage conferences you've been to. I'm not going to tell you the sort of things you can read in a book. You know, getaway weekends and five meaningful touches and men are like microwaves and women are like crock pots. You know, you can get that anywhere. I hope to push a little deeper than that. Bottom line is going to be this. In order to do marriage well, you need to be able to do some pretty sophisticated things relationally. Your heart, your character is going to have some skills and some abilities, and to be able to do those abilities well for marriage to work well. And guess what? Most of us are lacking at least some of those abilities. And before you know it, you're going to run into trouble in your marriage and not know why. And think, oh my gosh, I should have married that bass player. But the truth is that you're both running up against areas that God created in His image to be functioning, and you may be missing some. You may have some blind spots. I'm going to talk to you tonight in overview about sort of a model for what those things are. And we're going to look at two of them in detail tomorrow. But what is it that we need to be able to function well in a relationship? What does your heart need? What does your spouse's heart need? And where might you be having deficits? And then how can you be growing there together? That's sort of where we're going. Secondly, I hope there's some singles here. Singles? Good, okay. Oftentimes when I do this conference, see, that's why you're not meeting people. You're too quiet. You need to get out there. You need to get those hands up. See? You don't need any harmony. Just get that hand up there. I often call my marriage conferences finders keepers because I like to have singles and marrieds come because the same principles apply. This is for those of you who are married to keep your relationship, and for those of you who are searching to learn what to be looking for. You know, beyond, oh my gosh, he's cute. You know, so what are the categories of the kind of person you want to pick, and what categories do you need to be growing in to be, you know, pick worthy? You know, okay. So I want you guys developing a grid too. I want you listening to what makes people work well in relationships. Because most of us didn't do that. Most of us married people, we were just like, okay, well, we're out of college, let's get married, you know? So I want to try to do some how-tos. Don't you think it's interesting that our culture is flooded with how-tos? I mean, I'm trying to learn how to fly a jet. Long story. And I'm learning how to fly it on YouTube. It's an L-39 Russian trainer, and my dad and I are going to fly it in May, and I'm really getting good on it by watching YouTube. But what you cannot learn, what we don't have classes on, is how to relate. You know, the most important thing in the world. We're supposed to just wing it. You know, this is how Mom and Dad did it. This is how, you know, Meredith Grey and McDreamy did it. I don't know. It's like, I want to actually talk about how it works, okay? So tonight we're going to talk about how we got here. What is the problem? What's wrong with our marriages? And why do they hurt? Why our favorite solutions don't work? And we're going to talk through some overview of what are the basic categories humans need to do relationship well. In order to do relationship well, you're going to need some skills, okay? Like Napoleon Dynamite. Like, hey, Pedro, you've got skills, you know? All right, let's get started. Pardon the fact that my iPad is behind me, and I'll be turning my back to you because our cord is short. And we'll rewrite the number if you need it. Bottom line, let's get started. In case you didn't know, marriage conferences weren't always necessary. When God created everything, I would have been out of work. In the beginning, he created marriage, and he'd made it in such a way that it was wonderful. The Bible tells us what Adam and Eve's marriage was like. They had a wonderful marriage, and the Bible describes it. Anybody want to take a shot at what does the Bible tell us about their marriage? They were naked and not ashamed. All right, now that is not describing the first nudist colony. It's describing a relational status. In other words, it's saying that in Adam and Eve's marriage, they were able to be fully known. You know really me, even my yucky parts, and that is welcomed. There's no hiding, there's no posturing. I see your eyes, you see mine, and what I see back is that you like what you see. You enjoy me. They were just themselves. They didn't worry if they were good enough. They didn't worry about being judged by the other person. They were able to be completely known, and it was good. Any takers? We'll pass a sign-up sheet around, maybe people who, you know. This is what we were created for, and this is key. We don't think about this. It's what we still long for. Your heart is still geared to receive that. You will reach for it and long for it and fight for it and beat each other up for it because something in your heart still wants that kind of deep, connected longing. Think about it. I mean, it's not like somebody sent a memo to you when you were in your mother's womb saying, by the way, a lot's happened since the origin of the universe. It's not going to be what you think. You were created in God's image to live in perfect harmony and connection. And you're going to think you are getting off at the wrong planet. You're going to want to check your ticket stub. I mean, this place is going to stink. Nobody tells kids that. It's probably the reason that children cry so much when they're little. They can't believe what a mess this place is. I mean, we still long for this. Nobody lays in bed when they're 15 years old and looks up at the stars and says, God, please, you know, give me someone who'll be painful to live with. You know, we don't do that. We dream for Prince Charming. We long for that deep connection. We were created for it. And I'm going to call it the ideal. This is why people want to get married. They want this. They want this thing that our hearts were created for. That kind of connection. That oneness. That, you know, great sex. He leaves notes on your car. You know, you share your hearts. You know, you finish each other's sandwiches. I mean, sentences. And actually, most of us, when we fall in love, we do get that at least for a season. A therapist friend of mine, Megan Croft, calls it the spaghetti love stage. It's where you go, no, you like spaghetti too? Oh my gosh, me too. You know. Now, that ideal and that sort of fallen in love bliss gets a lot of heat. You know, people are always dogging it. I kind of think there's something. There's something in it that echoes the truth. I think there's something about that falling in love stage, the giddy butterfly wonder, that reflects something about what heaven's going to be like. I think that that's how God feels about us. I think his heart lights up when he thinks of your face. And I think when sin is removed and when our pain is removed, that joy of I can't wait to see them again will be restored. So I think there's something life-giving, image of God-like in that giddy first stage of the ideal. None of us get to keep it, but I think that you can at least remember it as something that one day I think we will have again. Just Cox's opinion, maybe not. So, here's the ideal. The ideal is great. I did a conference a couple weeks ago, and this young couple bounced up to me and they were said, "We've only been married 3 months. We're still in the ideal stage." I'm like, "Just run, go. Just don't say anything." All right, but then, as you know, along came a spider and sat down beside her, and sin enters the world. All right, we have the fall, and it's not long before we get stage two, which we call the ordeal, or the raw deal, or the let's make a deal. And now marriages are full of things that stink. You know, I mean, you misunderstand me, you attack me, you criticize me, you said I'm just like my mother, you know, as my mother, oh my gosh, as my wife said, you can see I'm trying to grow in some of these issues. As my wife said once, she goes, "Sometimes just you, the way you breathe annoys me, you know?" She also said, and I don't know if this is original with her, but I'll give her credit for it. She says, okay, let me see if I can get it right. Men marry women believing that they won't change, and they do. Women marry men believing they will change, and they don't. Get it? Think about it. Anyway, so now I'm fallen, she's fallen, we hurt each other, and we have kids. And we have the title of a book I want to write one day called "A Man's Home Is His Hassle." Is it good? Good? Huh? Yeah. My wife and I have been married about a month, and we lived in this cool little 1920s duplex in the Belhaven area of Jackson, and creaky hardwood floors and all that. So anyway, we were upstairs getting ready for bed one night, and all of a sudden we hear this, creak, pop, shifting sound downstairs, and we both look at each other and go, "What was that?" I said, "I don't know, you heard it, right?" And she's like, "Uh-huh, I heard it." I'm like, "What are we gonna do?" And she goes, "Well, maybe it's the boogeyman. Maybe I'll like go down there." And I'm like, "I ain't going down there if it's the boogeyman. Are you kidding me?" And she's like, "Well, my daddy would have gone down there." And I'm like, "Great, let's call your dad." And so, she looks at her Tony Stark, and I'm like, so much for the ideal for her. Now, you singles, I don't want to be Johnny Raincloud or anything, but this will happen, all right? Know it going in. You will fall hopelessly in love, and the yuck will come. And our culture makes it worse, actually. We live in a culture that is, in a sense, turned romantic relationship into sort of the icon, the hallmark, the idol, dare we say, of happiness. In our culture, we've been taught that if you're not happy, it's probably because you are not loved. Love being romantic love. One is the loneliest number. Three dog night psychology. It's like what you're missing is this kind of romantic thing. Think about pop culture, all those Meg Ryan movies in the 90s. She's smart and she's cute and she's lonely. Except for maybe her dog. And her cynical, urban-y friends, they say, "Oh, give up hope. You'll never find a good guy. Just look at the loser I'm dating." But she doesn't give up, and she keeps looking. And then this guy comes, and he sends her an email, or he meets her on the Empire State Building, or he gets a bookstore next door, or he's from another century, or he's an angel. They're all the same movie, right? And now she's cute and smart and not alone anymore, and it's just great. That's a setup. In real life, we all hit the ordeal, problem one, and we're often not happy and we're not fulfilled, and relationship starts to hurt, and you're critical of me, and that's problem one. But problem two, this is where it starts to get interesting. Is that in my experience, this is what I've seen in talking to people in my own life, most marriages, most humans, do not know what to do with that disappointment and with that ordeal. Okay? We hit the pain, we hit the fact that this isn't working, it's not feeling like it used to, and we do not really know where to go from there. In fact, if you think about it, what do we tend to do when we find that ideal to be contaminated? What do we do? At some level, think about it. We start doing things to demand the ideal back. In other words, for the most part, what are you saying when you start blaming, when you start criticizing, when you're saying to your spouse, why can't you be more blah, blah, blah? What am I saying? Why aren't you like this anymore? I want to make you the way I wanted you to be. I can't believe that you would. What is it we're saying when we say that? We're saying, I'm in the ordeal. I keep thinking I can point and it'll show up there. I'm in the ordeal and I want the ideal back. And in fact, try this on for ironic, or ironical, as people say. A ton of the marriage problems that we have are because we're trying to get the ideal back. In other words, a lot of the reasons that we're mean to each other or blaming to each other or attacking to each other is to try to get the ideal back, okay? Those actually become our marriage problems, okay? We're saying, I want to feel good again. And I'm going to beat you up if I have to get it. So at this point, in a sense, you're not being a jerk. When you're being unkind to your spouse because you're hurt or disappointed, something in you, of course, is being a jerk, but something in you also is begging to have that ideal back again, to have that naked, not ashamed back again. That's one thing, I don't care how lost you are in your relationship, one thing I think you have deeply in common. People come in my office and go, we have nothing in common. And I'm like, well, you have one thing in common, you're both really hurting and you want the hurt to stop. I mean, as far as that's concerned, you're like same and same. You know, you're besties. You're both hurting. Anyway, so here we are. We're at the ordeal. We want the ideal back, which makes the ordeal even worse. So what are we supposed to do? What's our third stage? I'm going to ask you to look at your marriage growth a little differently, as I alluded earlier. I want you to begin looking at your marriage from what I'm going to call a character perspective, or also an image of God perspective. And what I mean by that is this. Let's get psychological for a second. I think the voice is holding out, don't y'all? Okay. God is always kind, but in this he's just, I mean, he's always good, but in this he's just being kind. Thank you. Let's be psychological for a second. In order to make life work, any part of life, to be functional, to have relationships, to have friends, to be married, heck, to buy a car, to serve God well, God made us to where we need to have certain abilities in our hearts. Abilities to understand love, ability to make sense of being strong, the ability to manage my emotions, the ability to deal with failure, And that's a software that we have to learn. And we learn it in our relationships when we're younger. We continue to learn it in the body of Christ. But it is a software we have to learn. And when we're born, we are really pretty incompetent relationally. I mean, have you ever run across an unselfish infant? You know, hey, look, Mom, I got dirty britches, but you've done so much for me today. You know, I just sleep in. I'm fine for a while, you know. Relationally, they don't bring a lot to the table, right? Now, life and development and sanctification and parenting is about filling up that character software. It's about building inside of your heart those abilities to do things you used to not be able to do. Making sense of life, having friends, beefing up your resume of how to do life and how to do relationships. And by the way, it just so happens, as we list them, you will see this, that the very abilities that I've found in my practice, the abilities we need to make life work, to not get depressed, to manage anxiety or get away from addictions, or to have a good marriage, are the same things God calls us to in his image, in his word. That's why I call this a character perspective or an image of God perspective. It depends on which hat you put on. But they're the same thing. To love, to be steadfast, to be strong, to be humble, to make sense of forgiveness, on and on and on. It's going to sound like I'm teaching you the Bible. Well, I am. Now, we ain't born with those abilities, and childhood is about getting them, and adulthood and sanctification and coming to marvelous conferences like this is about completing them. So, sort of secret of the universe tonight as we start is we all hit adulthood missing some of those abilities to do life, to do relationships, to love a spouse well, to receive their love well. We lack abilities there, and that's going to leave a mark. Let me just apply this briefly to marriage and let you know what I'm talking about. Maybe no one ever taught your spouse what it meant, what it was like to really share their heart with someone else. To really say, this is who I am, and I want you to know me. Maybe they never saw that. Maybe they never were taught that. It's software, okay? So you ask them, let's spend some time together. Let's just you and me. And they're like, okay, I thought we talked yesterday. I mean, like, not a lot's changed. I don't have a lot of new news, you know? And you go, oh my gosh, did I like marry the wrong person? Am I going to doomed to a life of loneliness? You know, this person is never going to talk to me, whatever. What's going wrong there? What's happening there? Let's flip it over. Maybe you're one of those people who's kind of insecure. One of those people who's constantly sort of needing reassurance from your beloved that they really love you, that they're thinking about you. Maybe you were never taught that whole issue of groundedness and safety and trust, that when someone loves you, they love you. And even if they're distracted and doing something else, you don't need to be bugging them. You still with that in your marriage? This is the ability we're going to call attachment. And it has to do with, what does it mean to let love in? What does it mean to let you know me? What is intimacy about? Do I have the ability, and we have to be taught it, to let you know my heart? To have the ability to want to know yours? To have the ability for that to feel good, to care about how you feel, and for you to know how I feel? We're going to talk about this one in detail tomorrow. Some of us are terrible at this, okay? And it will affect our marriage, but we can grow. All right, let's try another one. Maybe no one ever taught you that it was legit for you to be free. That you could be strong, powerful, you could disagree with people, and you don't need to be afraid of that. Maybe they'd be upset about it, but you're strong enough to handle it. Maybe no one ever taught you that if someone's taking advantage of you, it's legit for you to say no, that you matter too. So your spouse is acting jerky, and you need to call them out. God, you're kind of being mean tonight, kind of have an edge. Can you kind of check that edge? That's hurting. But instead, maybe you're like this guy who was in my office who said, oh my gosh, I could never say that to her. She would blow up, man. It wouldn't be a divorce, it'd be a funeral, okay? Maybe some of y'all are that jerky spouse, okay? Maybe no one ever taught you to hear no. This is an issue, an area we call boundaries. And we're going to talk about this one tomorrow under the guise of making sense of conflict. What do you do when you have a relationship that has two people in it? Weird. Okay? Number three, another area where we might struggle. Maybe no one ever taught you that when you failed, it was safe. Maybe no one ever taught you that you didn't need to feel ashamed or you were like a bad person, you know? Can your spouse talk about a way in which you've hurt them without you needing to get all defensive? Do you have that ability? That's something we need to be taught and shown. Like us guys, when our wives tell us how to drive, you know, my wife is like, you know, turn right up here, honey. And I'm like, I know how to drive. You know, it's like, why am I reacting this strongly? It's because we feel shame. She's saying I'm dumb. She's saying I'm incompetent. Did anybody teach me that it's legit for me to fail or to not be the perfect driver, husband, hero, whatever? Anybody struggle with feeling criticized in your marriage or being the critical one? This is the issue we call making sense of bad and good. Well, That's visible. All right, last one, and we're going to unpack these in a minute, but I just want to give you the categories. Maybe no one ever taught you to be a powerful agent in the world, to on your own initiate, to take steps to do stuff without somebody else kind of reminding you, okay? You know that film where it feels like you're the only person in your marriage initiating anything? That if you didn't say clean up, nothing would ever get cleaned up, okay? That might be that your spouse is missing some of this ability to be an adult in an adult world and say, I'm going to initiate on my own. They didn't learn about being a powerful player. Or the other side of this topic is about authority. Can you be an initiator? Can you be proactive? Can you be an agent on your own? Flip side of this is, can you submit? I lost my place in my notes. Hang on. Yeah. Of course, I would get lost on the spot about submitting and being humble. I can't find it anywhere. Never mind. I don't need to know about that anyway. We have to be taught the ability to submit. Do we feel like it's demeaning to have to bend the knee, to defer to someone else, to say you're right? Male or female, okay? Issues of authority. Anyway, so we come to our romantic relationships and we say, at last, this is going to be the place where I will find fulfillment. Okay? I have all these empty places. No one's ever, like, really attached to me in a really connected way. Or no one's ever really given me the freedom to be me. Or no one's ever just made room for me to fall apart and be fallen and it's really cool. And no one's ever, like, helped me learn to be strong. But I'm going to get married. And at last, I'm going to find that. And our culture kind of says marriage is going to be this place where we're going to get these needs met. But suddenly we start running into things that I can't do in these abilities or that she can't do in these abilities. And we think, oh my gosh, you know, there must be something wrong with my marriage. I should have married that Sigma Chi, you know. And we start doing that thing Adam and Eve did. What did Adam and Eve do once they fell, once they sinned? They start going, I'm unhappy and it's got to be your fault, okay? And I blame or I criticize and we're off to the ordeal again. Are you getting this? Here's where we start your marriage therapy here tonight. Your marriage problems, in a really very real sense, are not problems with your marriage. They're problems with both of you, each of you being incomplete and broken, missing some of these spots, being confronted with situations that require you to be able to do stuff that God created us to be able to do. Love and forgive and be powerful. And you can't. And presto, you have marriage problems or social problems or work problems or spiritual problems. And people think this means they have a bad marriage. But what it means is it's like having a car that doesn't drive well. And so we're ready to dump this car. And I tell people all the time, the problem in the car, the problem is both of you guys are bad drivers. Or it's like parenting. If you don't have the character skills to parent well, then you're going to be miserable. You're going to have a house full of little Godzillas running around, and you're going to be going, oh my gosh, I hate these rotten kids, okay? It's not the kids, it's how you parent. It's the character skills you're bringing to the parenting. So, with marriage, the limitations that we have in our character, the inabilities, the blind spots are going to hit us in my relationship with my spouse, and I'm going to be married to Godzilla, okay? So, the third stage of our stages, from the ideal to the ordeal, the third stage is going to be, I'm just going to call it the real, or growth. I haven't thought of good, like, rhyming third name yet. If anybody has one, that'd be great. The ideal, the ordeal, and the blah, blah. You know, there needs to be a good zinger there. But the ideal, the ordeal, and character growth. Something's missing there, you know. It doesn't have a zing. But anyway, zing or not, I'm going to talk through them in detail now. And I want you to be thinking, Might this be one of my blind spots? Which one of these might be my spouse's blind spot? I want to get you out of the place where it's like, I'm so sick of you, blah, blah, blah. And I want you to be instead at the place where you're saying, you know that thing you talked about so-and-so? That's what you've been trying to tell me, right? I want you to get on the same team. The goal is growth. The goal is not changing them. The goal is how can you grow together, okay? So I'm going to talk through them in more detail and unpack that. You singles, likewise, I want you to be listening and thinking, instead of like, well, we're all the great guys, I want you to be thinking, you know, what is it that I need to be being able to do to have a good marriage? What I need to be looking for in a relationship? You're dating some guy right now, I want you to have the category, can he be connected emotionally? Don't wait till you're 45 to figure that out, okay? And your own growth here is going to help you. We all tend to marry people of about our same level of psychopathology, okay? So the more you grow, the better you'll pick, which also has application to us married people telling our spouse, you're so immature, okay? So what do we need character-wise to make life work? The first one we call attachment. We're going to go two ways with each one of these. Number one, two questions. Can I let you in, and can I keep you in? Like I say, we're going to hit this one, intimacy, what all that means, what these mean, a whole hour-long talk tomorrow, but let's go big picture right now. Can I let you in? Let's look at that one first. Think about what we usually talk about in life, the kind of things you may have talked about in the hall. You know, we sort of chit-chat news, sports, and weather, you know. Can't believe it's so warm outside, you know. How about them Tar Heels, or, you know, how's your mama and them? Or we communicate to solve a problem, you know. Should we, like, get a used car or a new car, or does Johnny have ADD, or have we paid the bills yet? And we kind of live at that sort of level, and that's incredibly valid. But if that's all you do, something's going to be very missing. If that's all you can do, then the people in your life, and probably you, will never get a real sense of who I am. Can I let you in means, do I have the ability, was I taught to understand what it feels like to be me? Some people don't know. And can I communicate to you what it feels like to be me? Can I let you know my heart? Can I go below the surface? Can I be intimate? Can I let you in? This is intimacy with another human. God's way into this, okay? God calls this abiding. God calls this knowing, and that Hebrew word knowing. Like, when he says, depart from me, I never knew you, he's not saying, I had a divine lapse of memory, don't remember you. He's saying, I didn't know you in that sense, like Adam knew his wife Eve, and she conceived. The Bible uses the word know to be this deep knowing. This abiding connection. God describes its absence by saying things like, these people honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. Your spouse ever say anything like that to you? For marriage to be meaningful, we need to be able to kind of go below the surface and talk to you about where my heart is. Guys get stereotyped as having a lot of trouble here, but I see it go both ways. I'm sort of the more touchy-feely one in my marriage. You know, men are from Venus, women are from Mars. We're kind of backwards. And I see a lot of marriages like that. Now, this is probably going to mean something in the feeling realm. You know, sorry guys. I'm hurting. I love you. I'm really proud of you about what you're doing with your job. I see you're really exhausted from the kids. You hear the heart there? I'm caring about your heart, and I'm talking to you about it. All right? Can I let you in? If you want to grow in your marriage, be asking, could this be one of my blind spots? One of the things we're going to talk about is how we're going to use the body of Christ to continue growing here. God knows we're not complete. He knows we have spots in this collection of abilities. And we're going to be coming to the body of Christ to be growing there. I want to have relationships with guys who are saying, dude, every time we say, how you doing? You go, I'm great, man. Get real. Who are you? I need people drawing me out. I need people teaching me this. If you don't have this, your marriage is going to take on that kind of roommate feel, all right? And you're going to be wondering, you know, what's wrong with our marriage? But maybe that you're not connecting, okay? We'll talk tomorrow about how you can both get better at that. Now, at this point, all the relational connecting types here in the group are going right on, preach it, brother. I'm so glad I brought him. And you're like elbowing him, you know. It's like, this is stuff I want you to hear, okay? Thank you, Dr. Cox. But attachment means to us relator types, have I developed the ability to feel loved and connected inside? Okay? In other words, can I keep you in? Both of these are important. This is about, do I live my life needing you to connect with me all the time and relate with me all the time and have special date night all the time and for you to be affirming with me? Or can I just feel good being me and know that you love me? Strong, grounded in love, the Bible calls it. Yes, part of love is sharing and intimacy, but that gets all the press. The flip side of this is just as important. A lot of us sharing types are constantly needing to be understood and close, and if we're not talking a lot, we're not okay. But the second question is, once I have the, do I have the ability to feel loved and connected even if you are watching the football game? All right? And just know that I matter to you. This is a character ability. It's called trust. It's called being rooted and grounded in love. All right? So, can I reach out and share? Can I trust and not be needy? All right, that's attachment. Now, pop quiz. What happens when I can't let you in meets little miss I can't keep you in? What happens when they meet? They get married. By the way, these are a continuum, okay? Nobody's one end or the other. But you're going to tend to gravitate more toward one direction or the other, and you kind of know what that is. And I want y'all to have some categories to talk with one another about. I want you, instead of kind of going, oh gosh, being married to you is like being, you know, married to a robot. I want you to be able to say, you know, that keep you in, let you in stuff he was talking about. That's kind of what I want to, you know, I want you to have some categories, all right? So you can talk about this stuff. Instead of what we usually do, which is blame. You know, what's wrong with you? You should have just hired a maid. All right, second one. Boundaries, the two questions are, can I be me? Can I let you be you? In other words, can we both matter here? Number one, can I be me? This is the ability to know who I am, the ability to know what I want. Can I have my own ideas and then be different from yours? Or am I one of those kind of chameleons who's going to kind of like, oh, no, no, whatever's fine. You know, those types. Can I be close to you but different from you? You know those people, and half of you are those people who are unable to be me unless you know, if someone's not going to like it, okay? I have to please everyone, and I'm on every church committee, and you know, my child forgets their lunch, and I'm, you know, bringing their lunch back, and you're always kind of compliant and doing what everybody wants, all right? We need the ability in our lives to not be a doormat, to be able to set limits, okay? I see people all the time. These people love to come to therapy. They come and they talk to me about this, you know, jerky, controlly spouse they have, and they have a lot to say about, you know, how mean they are and how much they're pushing them around and controlling their lives and how they're telling them how to drive or how to spend their money or whatever like that, and that's all bad and everything. But I always ask them, I'm like, you know, what if instead of complying with them or being afraid to upset them or doing their bidding, you said, you know what, I'll work with you on this. I understand that's what you want, but I want this. And somehow you and I are going to need to meet in the middle where we both matter. What if there are two people in this marriage? You might end up with the best marriage in Raleigh, you know? If you had a relationship, if you were in the relationship, okay? And they always say, well, they'd get really mad. And this person's living their whole life based on sort of how their spouse is going to do. Can you, or what their spouse is going to do if they, or them. Okay, can you be you in the relationship? You see these people who live in that compliant way, and I see them when they're 45 years old, and they're so resentful. I've just done everything my spouse wanted the whole, you know, all this time, and there's not a me. And they'll often get very depressed. They'll often act out in inappropriate ways. See it all the time. So we need a sense of self. Now, this is not the same as selfishness. Would somebody go get me a cup of hot water? I'm running low on gasoline. With some sugar in it. All right, this isn't selfishness. Selfishness means only I matter. All right? This is knowing who I am, and that being a player, that being a factor, me having a seat at the table. Okay? God calls this having a ye. All right? You know, when Joshua takes the people in the promised land and he says, choose ye this day whom ye will serve, okay? You got to have a ye. There's got to be somebody inside who's going, are we going to serve Yahweh like Joshua and his family? Or, you know, what are we going to do? There's got to be a chooser in you. God created that to be part of who we are. This is what stewardship is about, okay? Now, who do the doormats marry? Little Mr. and Mrs., I can't let you be you, all right? In other words, this is for the people who never learned to hear no. These other ones can't say no. These have never learned to hear no. They don't want to bend the knee. They don't want to make room for somebody else. I got a guy right now who I'm working with in his marriage, and he literally has never had anyone say no to him in his life. He kind of grew up like the little prince, you know? And he's literally confused when his wife says no to him. And of course, since I've been the one teaching her to say no to him, I'm like one of his favorite people right now. He feels insulted. It's like, how dare you not let moi have what moi wants, you know? I actually tend to be one of these people. I kind of like what I want and sure of what I want, and I know I'm right. And so the question we got to ask is, how much can I make room for my spouse to be them? How much can I embrace them not being me and be really cool with that? If you can't do this, welcome to the club. This happens to be one of my blind spots. You'll learn more about me as we go. if you can't do it, cool. Start talking to your spouse about it. Hey, babe, that's kind of what you've been talking about, right? Yeah, okay, how can we start helping each other with that? I actually started pushing, my wife is more of a doormat chameleon, and I started really pushing her to be herself. I'd say, where do you want to eat tonight? She says, oh, anywhere you want is fine. And I'm like, no. I really want you, you know, be you, tell me, push me, let's go. I want to be someone in her life who's helping her fill in the blind spots. And as you have these categories, I want you to live in that way with each other, okay? Number three, the issue of bad and good. Whoops, there's all my calendar for tomorrow. Two questions again. Can I forgive you? And can I forgive? Go away. Go away. Can I forgive me for not knowing how to run an iPad? That's beautiful, man. Thank you. That's close. That's sweet. Thanks.
There's two sugars in there, but here's some more if you want to.
Good, thanks. It's like I'm going to roll a cigarette here, you know. Now, think about it. This is a good example. This isn't very smooth, right? Now, people who don't have the ability to forgive me, what are they like? They have super tight rules, and they always have to look good, and they always have to do everything just right, and they can't screw up and mess up the iPad and sit here and have to make tea in front of 200 people. And obviously, I've done some growing in my ability to forgive me. I'm quite comfortable kind of being a dunce here with you, all right? Do you know what I'm talking about, though? This is one of the issues where we need that sort of freedom. Do I have the freedom to not have to, you know, have my house look like a garden and gun photo shoot, you know? Can I mess up and it be all right? Do I trust that God's grace is big enough for me to let him down, to let you down? Do I have the ability to let grace and mercy inside? That is a hugely difficult ability to have. We were born to be loved. We were born to have a sense of self, but our hardware system was not born to deal with good and evil. Of all the four we were going to talk about, this is the one that we would not have had to deal with had it not been for the fall. We would have had to learn about love. We would have had to learn about a sense of self and choosing. We would have had to learn about authority, which we'll talk about in a second. But we wouldn't have had to know about this. None of us are good at this. This is why everybody's insecure, because you're born under condemnation. You're born under the burden of the law, and your heart's not designed to have to make sense of good and evil and failure and someone else's failure. Okay? So this is one of the nastiest ones. And God did everything in his power to tell us, please do not eat of a tree that is called the tree of the knowledge of bad and good. That is a terrible thing. It will kill you. And it kills us every day. So, we have to do a lot of growth in our body of Christ, people. With children, you have to unshame children. Children are going to come out of the womb full of shame. And you have to actually add positive bonus points to their hearts to get them out of shame to understand grace. We'll do that in the parenting conference one day. But shame is part of our gut core. Now, flip that over and we have the first question, can I forgive you? In case you hadn't noticed, things on your planet are not perfect, and your spouse is not perfect. And yes, you heard it here from me on this day. You are not perfect either. Your spouse is right. And you will not be able to make life work very well until you make sense, until you develop the ability to make sense of the fact that anything that's not on Facebook is not perfect. Okay? And as we said, a whole lot of the cockamamie things we do in our marriages are the ways that we are actually responding to the hurt and the disappointment and the loss and the pain. We start protesting, we start accusing, we start attacking, we start saying, I don't want to forgive you for this. How dare you do that? I can't believe you did that. All right? Ironically, our difficulty in managing, can I forgive you, often are our marriage problems. Think about how much of your marriage is about who's the bad guy. I did not say that. Okay? Now, this blame thing was started by Adam and Eve, as I have alluded to. What they do right after they sinned, they got this knowledge of good and evil that came from eating of this tree, and they immediately hid, and then they did what? Fig leaves, hiding, right? And what else did they do? They blamed each other. In fact, Adam, think about it. Adam managed to blame God and Eve in one sentence. The woman who you gave to me. I mean, that's pretty good for your first day as a sinner. I'm thinking, you know, that's like hitting a double as a rookie in the big leagues. It's like, this is his first real shot at sin, and it's like, boom, boom. By the way, ladies, can you imagine Eve's face as her husband threw her under the bus in front of God? I know my wife's face when I throw her under the bus in front of my parents. they get thrown out of the Garden of Eden, and Eve's like, are you kidding? You know. Anyway. So, do we have the ability to process the fact that my spouse is not perfect, like moi, okay? Or do we live sort of demanding that it be different? One of the key places we could go here that's interesting, we can do this during Q&A, the two things that heal this area are love and grief. Love and grief are the things that metabolize the pain in the world and the pain about me. Do we have the ability to grieve the loss, or do I live in protest all the time? Grief is a gift God gave us to be able to metabolize our dreams not coming true, and be able to find grounding ultimately in loss and disappointment. None of us want to do that, but it's the way out. All right. Last one. Authority and agency. Again, two. Can I initiate? And can I submit? Core to the form of creation. Notice I'm talking a lot about Eden. I like Eden because I'm a psychologist. In other words, my study is the study of man. So if you want to learn about man, you kind of go back and learn about how man got made, like what was God's original form, because that's what I'm trying to get people back to, is how God originally created us to be. Core to the form at Eden was that God created man and woman both to be initiators. In other words, he says, I want you under me to be naming animals, subduing the earth, fruitful and multiply. I want you exercising dominion as my vice regents under me. And yet, at the same time, though we would have been rulers on earth, we were to do that under the authority of God. So, initiate and submit at the same time. This is a very adult ability. By the way, if you think about these four developmentally attachment, we begin learning when we're babies. Boundaries, that sense of self, having a sense of no, we start developing as toddlers. The issue of good and bad becomes a big deal when we're school-age kids. We have too much homework. I hate our minivan. That's not fair. His piece is bigger. You know, school-age kids. And teenagers are asking this question. Hey, I can initiate now. I mean, I got a car. How in the world am I supposed to do it, you say? Okay? Initiate and submit at the same time. How do I live as an adult who's powerful and also bend the knee? The centurion was talking about this. I'm a man among men, over men, and I say to this one, go this, and he does that. In other words, I'm a centurion, okay? But you can just say the word and my servant's healed. And Jesus tells us that Jesus marveled. Never seen such faith in all of Israel. Why? Because the centurion was saying, I get it. I am an initiator, but I'm also a submitter, and I know who you initiate to. You initiate to everything. You are the initiator. Just say the word. He showed his faith by understanding this issue of authority. Okay? So, can I initiate? Some things require in our lives and in our marriages that we act. All right? That I have the ability to come back to my spouse after a fuss and initiate a resolution. Hey, honey, let's talk about last night. Or are they the one who are always having to do that? Do I take responsibility for life's responsibilities? Do I take care of the kids? My wife used to hate it. I'd be like, yeah, sure, I'll babysit tonight. Like, babysit, I'll help you. She hated that. Can I initiate sex? Can I initiate picking up my own clothes? Which certainly there's not going to be any sex unless I pick up my own clothes. asking for a raise, blah, blah, blah. This is why your spouse gets so frustrated with you when you don't do these things. You're not taking your role of stewardship in your life, your initiative, and that leaves your spouse alone in a sense. What this is called when we don't do this is passivity. And it's one of the most insidious and invisible and destructive sins I know of. It creates this vacuum where people get trapped. It's funny, the hardest clients for me to treat are passive people. Their therapy just is glacial. It just takes eons. I don't know why. Passive people don't grow. Think about the double bind you put another person in if you're a passive person. If you're a passive person who doesn't initiate, here are your spouse. Let's just say your spouse, since this is a marriage conference. Here's your spouse's options. They can do, since you're doing nothing, they can A, do nothing, which means nothing will happen. Right? Or they can do something, which will make something happen and enable you to continue being passive. Because, wow, look, something happened. You didn't have to do anything. It's this terrible double bind. And it's why they want to wring your neck. So can we initiate? But as we're seeing, there are always two sides. Can we submit? Like Adam, can I be a powerful person in my life but still submit to others, like the centurion? Wives, can I be smart and strong and powerful and still submit to my husband's leadership? Guys, can I be an initiating leader but still submit to the fact that I need to make decisions and choices based on what is most life-giving to my wife and my kids? Or do we want to run everything? Do we balk at submission like it's slavery or insulting? One of the reasons we hate submission is submission tends to make us feel humiliated. And one of the ways we heal in that is by learning about a submission that is not degrading. It's one of the ways we teach kids about submission. We have to teach kids to submit. We often act like, kids just know how to submit and they're just not. You know, like here's this 3-year-old walking around with this incredibly sophisticated ability to bend the knee, and by golly, he just won't do what I say. No, submitting is a skill we need to be taught. And we do that primarily by teaching kids that you are under authority, my authority, I'm under authority too, so I get it. I get how hard it is for you to have to do what I say all the time. We can talk about that in Q&A if you want. Okay. That's a grid, a model. These are the basic building blocks of relationship, I think. And almost every problem you have, or actually most psychopathologies you have, kind of fall into some of these kind of categories. And I want you to use them to diagnose your marriage. And I want you to use them as a grid for dating. You're not going to find Mr. Perfect who has all of these, okay? In fact, as you hear these, you probably see one or two that you have blind spots in. You probably see, like, 4 or 5 that your spouse has blind spots in, okay? But the secret of the universe is that the reason people have bad marriages is not that they have a bad marriage, it's that they're missing some of these pieces, okay? In other words, I don't care how much a team works, if the players are lousy athletes, they're not going to win. Your marriage is going to be as healthy as the players are, okay? So I want you to see your marriage not as whether you, like, you know, married a nice person or not, but as the skill set. And I want you all to begin thinking about it together as a couple. Great topic for date night, okay? I want you saying, you know that attachment thing he was talking about? That's what you've been trying to tell me, right? Or, you know, I'm terrible at that forgiving myself thing. That's why I act like a maniac when you point out my flaws. I want you to hear this as, hey, we're both incomplete. That's what I mean by a marriage of grace. This is not let's find the bad guy and punish them. This is we're both bad and we're both fallen. That's why I started with that. Wow, you know, living with you can be really difficult, but man, I am no carnival cruise. How do we learn to sort of grow together, all right? Now, a whole other direction to go is I really do believe that this is where the body of Christ comes back in. The only place you develop these character abilities is in relationship. That's why we do it in parenting. That's a relationship. But it's also why there's so many each others in the New Testament. The reason God put so many each others in the New Testament, confessing one another, bearing one another, weeping with one another, supporting the knees that are weak, rebuking the unruly. There's this constant discussion of the interaction between each other. It's not because God is saying, y'all be nice people. It's because the way we relate to each other, the way I bring my brokenness to you, is going to be the matrix within which I will heal. Fellowship, connection with one another in your small groups, and your own. The reason therapy works is because it's a form of fellowship like this, not because of, you know, the brilliant wisdom of Dr. John L. Cox. Maybe a little. But God created fellowship, connection with other people, to be the place where I develop these things. If you want your marriage to grow, don't go buy the next marriage book. Be developing relationships in which I can say, okay, all my wife has to do is point out something I've done that's felt bad to me, and I just go after her, guys, or therapist, or pastor, or, you know, safe friend. Help me start making sense of that. Why is my heart so prone to be so defensive? You need other people to help you be doing that, okay? Your marriage is not the place where you can get growth for your marriage, okay? If you want to grow in these areas in your marriage, you can bring them to your marriage second, all right? After you bring them to your body of Christ people where you can get new fuel coming in from outside. The Bible has a lot more to say about the each other's in the connection in the body of Christ than it does in marriage. And we've reversed that. Our culture is so disjointed, we've turned marriage into this only little special place where you and me are going to have special time and nobody else is going to know these places where we struggle. And what it creates is a phenomenon I call two ticks and no dog. Okay? I want you saying, yeah, I'm going to talk to Mike about this because I should never have talked to you like that. Okay? I want your body, you as Christians, to be thinking as a community and as individuals, I need people in my life who can help me grow here. That's where that happens. We can talk about that more in Q&A. All right, that's all I've got for this. Do you want to take a break and come back into Q&A?